Back from our break, we were on to scallops. We have a committee report coming from, and then we have a number of motions and to move the framework forward. So I will kick it over to the chair, Griffin.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, you pretty much summarized our focus today. We've been working since June on setting up specs for 2026 and default measures for 2027. As we heard in the SSC review, you know, there's been an overall declining trend. And this is probably going to be the first time in the rotational management area that we're facing a complete lack of access area fishing. So November 20th committee meeting, there's a lot of debate on appropriate F rates in the Northern Gulf of Maine and days at sea for the fleet on Georges Bank and Mid-Atlantic. The committee did streamline the document, moving several alternatives to considered but rejected. And ultimately, there are a series of recommendations for preferred alternatives that I'll be offering up after we get a presentation on all this from Connor.
Thank you, and good morning, council members. Connor Buckley on council staff. So for the scallop report today, as the chair mentioned, I'll have a set of slides describing the current range of alternatives and our draft impacts for Framework 40. We'll be presenting the committee's preferred alternatives. We'll be looking for motions to select council preferred alternatives today, as well as a motion to submit Framework 40 to the Fishery Service. After that, I'll pause for questions. We'll also have a number of slides describing the scallop long-term strategic plan. We'll be proposing that for completion today. And so we'll have a brief overview of the strategic plan and then be looking for a motion regarding that. Overall, our outlook, we have a decision draft that will hopefully be ready for submission within a couple of weeks. And just noting that any delay in final action, adding new alternatives to the document at this stage will likely delay our submission of the framework. So we have a fairly streamlined scope of actions within Framework 40. These have been narrowed down slightly due to the lack of access area opportunities that have made it into the specifications alternatives. So that removed distribution of LEGC IFQ access area trips with no access area trips allocated to the limited access component in the current range of alternatives. There's also no, there wasn't any consideration for a distribution of research set aside compensation fishing in access areas. And so we ended up with a very streamlined set of actions. The first being the setting a updated overfishing limit and ABC based on the SSC's recommendation. Action two would be setting the total allowable landings for fishing year 2026 and 2027 default for the Northern Gulf of Maine. And then action three would be fishery specifications for 2026 and 2027 default, currently just including days at sea allocations and not any access area allocations. And I'd refer the council to document 2A, which is our Framework 40 decision document.
Which one did I go too many?
Back one, please. For Framework 40, the purpose and need, fairly boilerplate. The need for the document would be preventing overfishing, improving yield per recruit, and managing total removals from the Northern Gulf of Maine. And the purpose would be to set specifications, including annual projected landings, and to set landings limits for the Northern Gulf of Maine based on available biomass. Next slide. For section 4.1, action one, this would be updating the OFL and ABC for fishing year 2026 and 2027 default. The committee's preferred alternative would be to update the OFL and ABC based on the SSC's recommendation. And this, again, is a fairly boilerplate action that is updated each year in scallop specifications. So for considerations here, we note that the overall the Atlantic Sea Scallop resource is considered healthy. As we heard from the SSC report, we're thinking about that at the stock level, and there are additional concerns when we zoom in more spatially. The stock continues to not be overfished. Overfishing is not occurring. And these are based on the results of the 2025 research track that was peer reviewed this past April. Our results from the 2025 scallop survey show that overall scallop biomass is at the lowest level seen since 1999. So the overall resource condition is quite a bit decreased from the peak that the fishery saw less than 10 years ago. We've seen a large decrease in these proposed OFLs and ABCs relative to the 2025 OFL and ABC. And this is largely due to both the decline in biomass that we saw year over year from the 2024 to the 2025 surveys, but also the decreased reference points from the 2025 assessment. The overall outlook for the scallop resource, this is from the 2025 survey information, that 54% of the biomass is on Georges Bank, 38% in the Mid-Atlantic, and 8% in the Gulf of Maine. And on Georges Bank, it's largely being driven by a single, very large year class in the Nantucket Lightships South. That single year class represents 47% of all the scallops out there right now and 27% of the total scallop biomass. In terms of abundance, 71% of the total scallops are on Georges Bank right now, largely within that Nantucket Lightships South cohort, 27% in the Mid-Atlantic and 2% in the Gulf of Maine. And the majority of the animals there are 3 years old, so they would not be considered fully exploitable. We also are certainly considering environmental conditions that appear to be changing and increased natural mortality over time, particularly at the southern extent of the scallop range in the Mid-Atlantic, but also as in other areas such as Area 1. Next slide. So for our proposed fishing year 2026 ABC or ACL, that's based on a reference point of F equals 0.36. That would correspond to a 34 million pound ABC for fishing year 2026. And currently the range of spatial management, a single spatial management alternative between the alternatives in action three, but yielding a range of possible landings for the fishery between 16.2 and 17.1 million pounds. So under all the range of alternatives, we would expect the risk of overfishing to be quite low. Next slide. For action two and section 4.2.1 in the document, dealing with the Northern Gulf of Maine management and total allowable landing setting for fishing year 2026 and 2027 default. There are currently three alternatives in the document, including no action. The no action alternative would represent the highest set aside out of the current three alternatives. That no action set aside is based on 75% of the fishing year 2025 Northern Gulf of Maine set aside. And so that would correspond to 507.63 pounds. There would not be a default for 2027 under that alternative. Alternative two would be to set a TAU using an F of 0.25, but only using the exploitable, applying that F of 2.5 only to the exploitable biomass on Stellwagen Bank. And so that would essentially be assuming no fishing occurring throughout the rest of the Northern Gulf of Maine Management Unit. That would result in a total allowable landings of 255,047 pounds. After deductions for observer coverage and RSA are deducted, yielding a Northern Gulf of Maine set aside of 204,694 pounds. The 2027 default under this alternative would be 50% of the 2026 set aside, so 102,347 pounds. This would represent a very substantial decline in the Northern Gulf of Maine set aside relative to the fishing year 2025. Set aside. The committee's preferred alternative, alternative three, would set a Northern Gulf of Maine TAL using an F of 0.18 applied to all areas within the management unit. That would result in a Northern Gulf of Maine TAL of 417,642 pounds and a resulting set aside of 372,756 pounds. That would also have a 2027 default set at 50% of the 2026 set aside. And so that would be the committee's preferred alternative. That would still be a reduction relative to no action. And so considerations for the Northern Gulf of Maine that we've discussed, this would be the fifth year since Amendment 21 and the TAL sharing agreement between the limited access general category component in the area, and also assuming deductions for observer coverage and the research set-aside program. The decision points for this action really rest on the fishing mortality rate applied and which areas the council expects fishing effort to occur within the area. We'll note that as in most years, the majority of biomass is located on Stillwagon Bank, but it's approximately equal to the biomass that's also off of Stillwagon Bank within the rest of the management unit. The committee's preferred alternative also equates to the status quo management. So the council's preferred alternative for fishing year 2025 was also an F of 0.18 applied to the exploitable biomass across the Northern Gulf of Maine. But using the 2025 survey information, this would result in a lower resulting set aside, and therefore a lower overall revenue and economic benefits relative to the fishing year 2025. So the revenue estimates for this current range of alternatives would range from 3.72 million to 9.22 million. That 3.72 million would be under alternative two, 9.22 million would be for no action alternative one. And the committee's preferred alternative would be expected to result in a Northern Gulf of Maine revenues of $6.78 million, equivalent to about 1,864 trips with the 200-pound limit. Next slide. Moving on to action three, so the overall fishery specifications. Currently three alternatives in the document here, and I'll show them one by one. Alternative one would have, under no action, would be 18 days at sea. Spatial management in this area, under this alternative, would look at a closure in area two, area one, Nantucket Lightship north and south, as well as the elephant trunk. There would be no default access area allocation under no action. There would be a 75% of the fishing year 2025 days at sea set under framework 39, which would result in 18 days at sea allocated. The LAGC IFQ component would be allocated 5.5% of the projected landings and therefore would result in 744,000 pounds. Next slide. Alternatives two and three would use the same spatial management, which would open up the elephant trunk, which was a closure this current fishing year, as well as area one, which is currently an access area allocated trip in fishing year 2025. Area two would close under both of these alternatives. We note that area two in some configuration has been open for a number of years now, and we've noted pretty substantial declines in the 2025 surveys. Overall, the remaining alternatives in the document, again, don't consider any access area allocations. This is fairly novel for the scallop fishery in that there has generally been an access area allocation in some form for a long number of years. Really, since the rotational management program has started, we haven't had a year like this. And I think that's really responding to the overall declines that we're seeing in the 2025 surveys and the lack of really any dense aggregations of scallops to draw an access area around. And so I think the remaining alternatives in the document here, alternative two and alternative three, which would allocate 34 and 36 days at sea respectively, are really thinking about opening up the remaining area and spreading out the fleet as much as possible and allowing an increased days at sea allocation to make up for the lack of any access area allocation. And so under alternative two, that would be 34 days at sea. The resulting projected landings would be approximately 16.2 million pounds. The IFQ component would be allocated 5.5% or 888,000 pounds. For alternative three, that would be 36 days at sea, resulting in landings of about 17.1 million pounds and an IFQ allocation of 921,000 pounds. Next slide. Under both of these alternatives, the part-time limited access component would get 40% of the days at sea allocation. So for the committee's preferred alternative, alternative two, that would be 13.6 days at sea. Under both alternative two and alternative three, the fishing year 2027 default measures would be 75% of the days at sea. So for alternative two and three, there would also be no default fishing year 2027 access area trip allocated. So between these three alternatives, the committee's preferred was alternative two. That would be 34 days at sea. This differed from the advisory panel's recommendation to add an alternative for 38 days at sea. And there is a lot of discussion around really the range of expected landings under each of these range of days at sea. So we originally had a range from 32 to 36. And so as we can kind of see the resulting landings, they're not substantially different between either of these alternatives, alternative two or alternative three, and the difference being less than 1 million pounds. Under both alternative two and alternative three, there was an addition to these alternatives to essentially remove the delayed opening in area one, which would open under both of these alternatives. Currently, that delayed opening, which was put in place in framework 39, would have area one closed from April 1st through May 15th. The intent of removing that delayed opening was to allow fishing year 2025 carryover trips to access the area at the beginning of the fishing year and continue fishing without having to wait for that 45-day closure before getting in there to finish any remaining area one access area allocations. And also subsequently would allow days at sea fishing in Area 1 to begin sooner in the fishing year. As I noted earlier, Action 4, which would typically specify the allocation of LAGC IFQ access area trips, is not necessary. The committee did select a preferred alternative, which was to allocate any IFQ access area trips to all available access areas and without any determination of which access area. But currently there aren't any alternatives that would include an access area allocation for the limited access component. And so action four is not needed or presented today. Next slide. Also determined under action three, typically is the scallop RSA set aside, which kind of ties into the status of the 2026 Notice of Funding Opportunity. As I'm sure everyone is aware, the publication is uncertain. We did hear some tentatively positive news yesterday regarding the publication of the NOFO. We just note here that Council could consider whether to reduce the RSA set aside in 2026. Currently, that's at 1.275 million pounds. 538,000 pounds roughly has been already allocated for multi-year awards, and there's roughly 736,000 pounds remaining. We'll note the council does not need to take action on this. There are avenues to use the unawarded RSA set aside to potentially expand 2026 survey efforts if the 2026 NOFO does not end up getting published. Next slide. So jumping in more into the overall impacts of the range of alternatives and starting to think about fishing year 2025 fishery performance as it relates to that, the overall landings per unit effort for the open bottom fishing year 2025 was slightly higher than what we saw in 2024. So about 1,500 pounds per day, relative to fishing year 2024, saw really the lowest in recent years of about 1,000 pounds per day. In fishing year 2025, that was, I think, largely influenced by a burst of open bottom landings in the Nantucket Lightship West back in May and early June. And so that led to the spike you can see on the orange line in the plot to the left there. But overall, LPUE has been slightly increased, even despite that, throughout the rest of the year. I think that's tentatively positive news for the catch rates in the open bottom leading into 2026. Other considerations really around Area 1, which initially there were AP and committee discussions around an access area trip to Area 1 in some form for fishing year 2026. Those were removed from the document at the committee's last meeting. A lot of that concern stems from the uncertainty in the performance of Area 1 this year. We've noted elevated natural mortality, likely related to predation in the area. And overall, the area has seen poor yields. We'll note that about half the remaining 2025 allocation has not been caught yet. And we would expect the majority of that to be taken sometime in April and May during the carryover period. And so there's still a lot of weight to be removed from this current year's allocation there. Yields in the area have been quite poor. A lot of smaller animals being landed from those from that area, and so I think led to a lot of concern from the PDT, the AP, and the committee around any future allocation there for 2026. The other big concern is really about what the future of the scallop resource is going to look like in the next couple of years. We've been kind of discussing the outlook for 2027 being really reliant upon this large year class in the Nantucket Lightship. We don't expect those animals to really be largely exploitable before 2027. They're going to be 3 years old in 2026, be 4 years old in 2027. This large peak in this size frequency plot for Georges Bank, this is from the SMAS drop camera survey in 2025. That large peak is almost entirely made up of the animals in the Nantucket Lightship South. They make up the majority of the biomass and the number of animals on Georges Bank. Compared to the 4-inch ring, most of the resource on Georges Bank right now would not be considered fully exploitable. And at 4 inches, we'd expect half of those animals to be caught by the 4-inch ring. And so how that relates, I think the future of the scallop fishery on Georges Bank in the next couple of years is really going to be dependent upon the success and survival of that Nantucket Lightship cohort, which we expect to maybe begin allocations in 2027, depending on the results of any future surveys. But with that, next slide. Jumping into biological, social, and economic impacts. So for the fishery specifications alternatives, again, three alternatives there, alternative two being the committee's preferred. The overall expected revenue from that range of alternatives would range from $148 million up to about $278 million. The difference between alternative two being the committee's preferred and the alternative three is relatively small, in the range of about $15 million. The overall F under alternatives two and three, also a fairly narrow range of about an F of 0.237 to an F of 0.253. That's relative to the ABC set at an F of 0.36. Overall, again, we expect the risk of overfishing to be low under this range of alternatives. We'll note that the majority of the biomass is currently found on Georges Bank, but the proportion of that biomass that's exploitable is slightly larger in the mid-Atlantic. And so relative to what we've seen in fishing year 2025 so far, which is, I would say, slightly more effort in the mid-Atlantic open bottom than we've seen in previous, in the last couple of years, We would expect that trend to likely continue with slightly more relative effort in the mid-Atlantic than on Georges Bank. And the resource does appear to be slightly healthier and of larger mean size in the mid-Atlantic relative to the Georges Bank resource for next year. The revenue estimates between these, like I said, between $264 and $278 million. We'd expect the overall social and economic impacts for alternative two and three to be positive relative to no action, but slightly negative to status quo. The status quo alternative we would expect, or the status quo scenario, I should say, would result in around $296, $297 million. And so this would be a slight decrease relative to the status quo management approach. Next slide. For non-target species impacts, we do not currently have bycatch projections for 2026 for the allocated groundfish stocks. We do expect those to be available, and we would be writing those up for the submission of the document. Qualitatively, we can say that with the closure of Area 2, we'd expect a likely decreased catch of Georges Bank yellowtail for fishing year 2026. Potentially, a catch of northern windowpane may continue to exceed the sub-ACL due to the majority of that catch coming from the open bottom in kind of central and eastern Georges Bank. We also expect a slight increase in effort within the southern New England mid-Atlantic yellowtail and southern windowpane flounder stock areas. Southern New England mid-Atlantic yellowtail being a species that the scallop fishery will likely have exceeded the sub-ACL for fishing year 2025. Lastly, while we'd expect some of the catch rates of these allocated flatfish stocks to increase, the overall amount of fishing effort and really area swept would be expected to decline under both alternative and alternative two and alternative three relative to status quo. And so we'd expect a slight positive impact to non-target species relative to status quo management. Next slide. For protected resources, we'll note that there generally are fewer protected resources interactions, interaction concerns on Georges Bank, namely for sea turtles, loggerhead sea turtles, and sturgeon relative to the mid-Atlantic. We do still expect the majority of effort to be on Georges Bank, but like I noted earlier, slightly more effort in the mid-Atlantic compared to the past couple of years. Open bottom days of sea would be increasing under the current range of alternatives. But like I said, again, overall days fish and swept area would be expected to decrease. And so overall, we'd expect the impacts to protected resources to be slight positive relative to status quo. In the Northern Gulf of Maine fishery, effort is likely to decrease. The season would be expected to wrap up before mid-May. It has in the last couple of years, and with a decrease set aside under each of these alternatives, we'd expect that trend to continue. And that would be before sea turtles would be entering the area, and so we wouldn't expect an increased impact to protected resources in the Northern Gulf of Maine either. For EFH, again, we will when we have additional projections available, we'll be providing estimates of area swept and habitat efficiency to estimate the impacts to EFH. But currently with the spatial management focusing on the days at sea rather than access area allocations, where we're generally focusing effort on denser aggregations of larger animals, we would expect habitat efficiency and area swept to be lower relative to status quo. Next slide. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Connor. As you all get ready for questions, I actually have one myself, and this relates to the non-target impacts, the flatfish bycatch, specifically around the southern New England yellowtail and southern windowpane. You talked about that the effort will increase in that region. You expect the catches to go up, but you actually expect to see a decline versus the current status quo. I'm just kind of seems counterproductive. So I was wondering if you could just elaborate on that a little more. Thank you.
Sure, happy to. I think the concern around southern New England, mid-Atlantic yellowtail, and where we saw elevated catch rates for this current fishing year seemed to be directly related to the burst of open bottom effort in the Nantucket Lightship West. We don't expect that area to see the same level of fishing effort. The exploitable biomass in that area was low in the 2025 surveys relative to the 2024 surveys. While there might be elevated catch rates throughout the southern extent of the resource, again, we don't expect an increase in overall areas swept in the mid-Atlantic relative to fishing year 2025. And so do expect decreased overall bycatch.
Thank you for that. Questions for Connor from the council? Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Connor. I had a couple questions on the Northern Gulf of Maine. The first one, I think you said about half of the biomass in the Northern Gulf of Maine is on Stellwagen Bank, if I heard you correctly. Do we have an estimate of what the exploitable biomass on Stellwagen is in pounds?
Yes.
Okay. If it's hard to find, then...
The projected exploitable biomass on Stellwagen within the Northern Gulf of Maine Management Unit for 2026 is about 1.1 million pounds.
Great, thanks. And so that's what was used to set target F rates on Stellwagen and alternative to, was that biomass?
Yeah, okay. That's correct.
And how much of the effort generally in Northern Gulf of Maine occurs on Stellwagen? I think it's quite high, but general estimate on that?
I don't have a percentage, but I would say the majority.
Okay. And last question, I raised this at the committee meeting, but if we were to allocate the 370,000 pounds under the committee's preferred alternative, what would the F rate on Stellwagen be if the historic trends continue and those pounds come off of Stellwagen?
I don't have that exact number handy. Did provide that for the committee. I believe it was in the range of 0.4 to 0.5.
Doug Braun?
I have that number handy. Just wanted to point out at an F rate of 0.18 for the whole area would result in a realized fishing mortality rate of 0.39 on Stellwagen.
Further questions for Connor on the presentation? Ted Platts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the presentation, Connor. I just had I think it's probably a simple question on the NOFO. There's the 736,286 pounds that seem to be not specified as to what's going to happen with that. Can you just offer a little clarity? I kind of missed out on that. I missed what you were saying. Sorry.
Sure. What we've been told is that there are a couple of options of how those pounds could be used. Currently, they could, I think, be used to expand the scope of current awards, of which there are most of the current survey efforts have multi-year awards that would run through 2026. I think there is some leeway to work with those RSA recipients to either expand coverage or modify their projects in some way and use those extra pounds.
Yeah, okay. So you anticipate they will get used. We just haven't determined exactly how.
Yes, I think that their staff at the regional office are hard at work on that.
Any further questions from the council? Eric Hansen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little clarity with the RSA. The surveys are basically completely funded for this coming year. The 736,000 would usually go towards special projects. That I'm not sure if the there's any expansion on those that would take up the full 736,000 pounds. What's missing this year is the Gulf of Maine survey, a dredge survey, which had a 20,000 pound allocation. So if everyone expands to cover everything that was covered this year, it should be in the range of 20,000 pounds that would be allocated. I don't think there's any special projects that would use up the rest. If that's unclear, Connor can expand on that.
Connor? Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. So Mr. Pentney mentioned this yesterday in his report that the NOFO has not published, which is extremely unfortunate. And we're not really sure what it means for the future of the RSA program, if this is a one-off year or if this is, you know, ultimately a problem moving forward. I just wanted to note that we have had some issues with survey coverage in the past related to, you know, this past year, the HABCAM was lost. And so, you know, that was lost coverage. We've had some issues with federal vessel sea time access. And so Connor and I have talked a bit that these pounds may be, you know, critically useful in 2026 if there is any sort of gaps in federal survey coverage and, you know, the uncertainty of the future of the RSA program. So we do anticipate the pounds will be used in some capacity for research.
Further questions from the council? I'll go out to the public in the room here. Dr. Quinn?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. John Quinn, Fishery Survival Fund. I think it's slide 13, but the summary of biological, social, and economic impacts. Well, I can keep talking. So the slide that I saw had alternative two with a overall F rate of 0.237. And alternative three, the 36 days, 0.253. Now I do my simple math, and that comes out to a difference of 0.016, not 0.16, 0.016. So that seems pretty close to me. So I guess my question is there much of a difference, a biological impact difference between alternative two and alternative three?
No, I don't think that there is a substantial difference in the biological impact there. It would be dependent on catch rates, but overall, no, I don't think so.
Thank you.
Further questions from the public in the room? Seeing none, I'll go online to Peter Hughes.
Good morning again. I apologize. I missed the last Scallop AP and committee meetings, and I do have a couple of questions. But first off, the NOFO, is that notice of funding opportunity?
Correct.
And have we set aside scallops this year for 2026, or are we about to, with no notice a funding opportunity?
Correct.
So those scallops are there, but we have no way to utilize them. Okay. Second question. This one's a no-brainer. My apologies. I can't remember. Is there still zero possession limit for yellowtail?
That is correct.
Thank you. My third question. The continued growth of large year class in Nantucket Lightship South, which encompasses 40% of the total scallop abundance and 20% of the scallop overall biomass, are they continuing to grow at, you know, regular scallop growth rates, or is there a bit of a density problem in there? Whereas in the past, we called those the Peter Pan scallops.
Thank you for the question. Our current understanding of the growth rates and for that cohort are that they are slower than scallops elsewhere on Georgia's Bank, but they are growing faster than the Peter Pan scallops. And so the density dependent effects noted from that previous cohort are not quite as relevant here. They're in shallower water. Habitat appears to be slightly better than that deeper water cohort from 2012, 2013. So tentatively positive.
Thank you. That's really good to hear. So a bit of a silver lining there. So thank you.
Thank you, Peter Hughes. Online, I have Ron Smolowitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Connor, do we have area by area natural mortality on Georgia's Bank? For example, those scallops in Nantucket Lightship South, do we have a natural mortality figure for them? And same for closed area one. I remember, you know, 3-4 years ago, we were tracking a very large recruitment there that all disappeared, probably due to predation. But do we actually have natural mortality numbers, F rates?
We have natural mortality parameters that are used for the assessment model, the CASA model, as well as carried over into the SAMS model. We don't calculate a realized natural mortality after the fact and try to separate F from M, essentially. That can be done for areas where there's no fishing effort, and we can kind of attribute that to natural mortality, but we don't, that's not something we do calculate.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, wondering because we're betting everything, you know, for the future on Nantucket Lightship South, and you would think that we would actually try to do some real-time calculations of the natural mortality. And then I'm not a biologist, so I have a question about F rates. If a fishing mortality F rate of 0.2 and a natural mortality F rate of 0.6, would that mean that it's three times more likely for a scallop to be naturally killed versus killed by the fishing activity?
I'm also not entirely sure. I would be guessing. I don't know.
Okay, I just think that's going to be important for considering the options. You know, everybody tends to think leaving scallops behind is money in the bank, but if they have three times more chance of being eaten by a starfish than being caught by a fisherman, that should be quantified and acknowledged. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smolowitz. Any other further comments, questions from the public? Back to the council. No other questions for Connor. I will turn to Chair Griffin with a number of motions.
Thank you, Chair. I will start in order with our first committee motion on the overfishing limit and acceptable biological catch. If you want to follow along in the decision document, I think Connor referenced that. That was document 2A. So, let's see. All right. So on behalf of the committee, I move that the council adopt in section 4.1, alternative 4.1.2, updated OFL overfishing limit and ABC acceptable biological catch for fishing year 2026 and fishing year 2027 as the preferred alternative. This option updates the OFL and ABC based on the best available science. It's a pro forma update that the scallop FMP does every year.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. So committee motion does not need a second. Any questions or comments from the council on the motion on the board? Seeing none, any from the public either here in the room or online? Back to the council. On a show of hands, those that are in favor of yes, please raise your hand and we'll get a count and I'll then put your hands down. The motion passes 17-0-0. Ms. Griffin.
Thank you. The next motion will be on the Northern Gulf of Maine total allowable landings. On behalf of the committee, I move that the council adopt in section 4.2.1, alternative 3, set the Northern Gulf of Maine TAL with set-asides to support research, monitoring, and a directed LAGC fishery. Set the Northern Gulf of Maine TAL at an F of 0.18 using Stellwagen, Ipswich, Jeffries, Platts, and Machias-Seal Island as a preferred alternative. This results in a fishing year 2026 Northern Gulf of Maine TAL of 417,642 pounds. A Northern Gulf of Maine set aside in fishing year 2026 of 372,756 pounds. And a fishing year 2027 Northern Gulf of Maine set aside set at 186,378 pounds. Setting the TAL at 0.18 using all Northern Gulf of Maine areas would represent a conservative catch limit relative to the fishing year 2026 default Northern Gulf of Maine set aside, and considers that the majority of fishing effort is expected to occur on Stellwagen Bank. The main cohort on Stellwagen will be 9 years old in fishing year 2026 and has little additional growth potential. This alternative also considers that there's exploitable biomass off of Stellwagen Bank and Ipswich, Jeffries, and Machias Sea Line.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. To John Pappalardo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to offer a motion to amend. I'd like to move that the council adopt in section 4.2.1 alternative. I'm not sure it would be alternative three anymore, Mr. Chairman, but set the Northern Gulf of Maine TAL with set asides to support research, monitoring, and directed LAGC fishery. Set the Northern Gulf of Maine TAL at F equals 0.21 using Stellwagen, Ipswich, Jeffries, Platts, Machias as the preferred alternative. The fishing year 2026 Northern Gulf of Maine TAL would then be set at 482,753 pounds. I don't have the calculations for 27 or 8.
Thank you. This is not a committee motion. It will need a second. Is there a second on the board? Eric Hansen. Go ahead, John. Rationale.
Mr. Chairman, I was the maker of the motion at the committee for F of 0.18. The rationale that's in the original or underlying motion, I think, still applies to this motion. The reason I'm asking the council to consider increasing the F rate across the Northern Gulf of Maine has a lot to do with what I did after the committee meeting. I went and looked at the size distribution on Stellwagen. The exploitable biomass on Stellwagen and other parts of the Northern Gulf of Maine management area, as well as the substantial amount of biomass locked up in the Western Gulf of Maine. I think I'm comfortable with the change from 0.18 to 0.21, which if I did my math properly, I think it results in an increase for next year in landings of 65,000 or so pounds. It's still well below the F rate that status quo would deliver. It still represents a reduction to the fishermen in the Northern Gulf of Maine.
Thank you for that, Mr. Pappalardo. I believe we're trying to finish up those bullet points to get that on table, but we'll open up initial discussion for the council. Tog Bond.
Thank you very much. I strenuously oppose this motion, as folks probably expected. I was not at the committee meeting and the AP meeting. I was out of the country, so I wasn't able to weigh in on this. I was disappointed, in fact, that the decision was made to accept a 0.18 fishing mortality rate. I think that's short-sighted, but it's something that I can live with. I'm nervous that the philosophy that has driven decisions concerning the overall fishery is beginning to seep into the Northern Gulf of Maine. When we had the 2012 booming year class, it was able to soften the blow of short-sighted decisions that were made at the council. When recruitment is high, we have the luxury of doing what we, you know, what we want to get more money in our pockets right now. When recruitment is not high, we lose that luxury, and it seems like people haven't caught up to where we are right now. From 2009 to 2015, I came here with my merry band of Mainers on a regular basis to get folks to try to pay attention to what was going on in the Northern Gulf of Maine. And it was a battle because people weren't concerned with the Northern Gulf of Maine. It wasn't important. And now it's become more important for two reasons. One is that the resource in the Northern Gulf of Maine is doing really well compared to other areas and compared to what it did in the past. And the other reason is that the resource south of the Northern Gulf of Maine is not doing well at all. And council decisions can be credited with both of those trajectories. Mother Nature deals the cards, but we play them. And I have always argued at the committee meetings for more conservation. The argument generally plays out that folks are saying the resource isn't doing well. So folks like me say, well, we need to take a break. We need to cut back because there aren't enough scallops out there. And the fishermen say, well, we can't find scallops. You need to give us more days. I generally weigh in on these conversations, and yet my real focus is the Northern Gulf of Maine. So when I lose the battles to the waters to the south, I'm like, well, it's okay. I'm going to focus on the Northern Gulf of Maine. But I don't want the Northern Gulf of Maine to suffer what has gone on to waters to the south. The Gulf of Maine for years has spasmodic booms and busts. We have one good spot right now, that's Stellwagen. At a 0.21 fishing mortality rate, looking at all the areas, that would result in a 0.47 realized mortality rate on Stellwagen. We can't afford to do that. The fishing is going to take place on Stellwagen. I think we need to look to the future and be proactive and vote for a viable long-term resource. This fishery is supposed to be diverse. It's supposed to have folks that have Northern Gulf of Maine permits, small boats, mid-sized boats, but it was designed for a purpose, and that was not to provide an insurance policy to boats that want to be able to fish outside the Northern Gulf of Maine and then come in when that's doing well. We need to have a viable fishery, and we need to remember there are some guys that only have Northern Gulf of Maine permits, and they want a future, not an early payout. I strenuously oppose this.
Thank you, Ms. Braun. Jeff Smith.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'll be opposing this motion as well. Actually, I was prepared to oppose the original committee motion because I'm concerned about the concentration of effort that we are going to see on Stellwagen Bank next year. I understand things aren't looking good in other parts of the fishery for the scallop fishery, and that Stellwagen in the Northern Gulf of Maine is a bright area out there. But I just get concerned when I think about, you know, taking upwards of a third of the total biomass off of Stellwagen Bank next year. I feel like we need to be a little more conservative in our setting of TALs and F rates. You know, I listened into the committee meeting. There was a couple motions that did come up for something a bit more conservative that didn't succeed at the committee. I don't have another motion to amend, but I'm just concerned that if we take this aggressive an approach in the Northern Gulf of Maine, because we can't do the area management, we're actually setting F rates based on the biomass that we're targeting, that we're going to find ourselves in this room or in this town next year discussing whether we can even open Stellwagen again because we've taken so much of the biomass off in 26. So I'll be opposing this motion as well as the committee motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Listening to the presentation today, hearing that 90% of the scallop, well, the majority of the scallops on Stellwagen Bank are 9 years old, they're long in the tooth. They're going to die of natural mortality. Landings have, over the last few years, have average meat weight has gotten larger. Landing less than 10 count was the majority this year. Maybe it was 12 count the year before. They have grown a little bit over the last 2 years, but now they're on the down cycle. I don't have a problem with a higher F rate on Stellwagen. There's still a lot of scallops scattered around the rest of the Gulf of Maine. So I seconded this motion to get this conversation on the table, but you say I don't have a problem with localized overfishing on Georgia's Bank to utilize a resource for the country that would otherwise just die of a natural mortality. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. I will come to Ms. Ware. I just let you know, I think most of us realize we're experiencing technical difficulties on the Zoom meeting. So if we can just raise our hands in person here. Thank you.
No, it's not just me.
Thanks. Yeah, I think all our Zooms just crashed. I'm going to speak in opposition of the motion to amend. I think the underlying motion does a better job of balancing a lot of the kind of opposing constraints I heard at the committee, which is socioeconomic success in this fishery with what the realized F rate is in a local area. I don't think a higher set aside is going to have fishing occur over a broader geographic area. I think it's just going to hammer the Stillwagon Bank area more. This is a short season fishery. It's a high value product. Every fishing day counts for these folks. It's not an environment that promotes exploratory fishing for different areas. It's an incentive structure where certainty counts. And right now that certainty is Stillwagon Bank. And I'll just note, I've heard it from a couple folks. I think this is the bright spot for the council right now. I honestly can't think of another fishery where we have growth in participation. We have excitement over a resource. We have people making good money. I think that's great. I'm willing to push the bounds a little bit on what the realized F rate is on Stillwagon to keep that going, but I'm not willing to compromise that for 2027 out. I just think this is too valuable of a bright spot for the council right now. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Ware. Any more council members around the table? If they have their hands present. Ms. Griffin.
Yeah, I'll just say I do support the amendment. I'm more in the camp of the rationale that we've heard from John and Eric. I think if there were multiple year classes in Stillwagon, I'd be more inclined to be concerned about hammering them. But again, they are aging out, and with the Western Gulf of Maine closure, I do think that helps balance the future years recruitment, potential recruitment. So I support the amendment.
Back to Togbron.
I will just note that the fishermen that I spoke to said approximately 70% of what they were bringing up was 1020s that they were high grading, which I'm not proud to admit to, but there are a lot of scallops that are not used there right now. They're not all 9 years old. There is a future that I think we need to be focused on.
Mr. Hansen, second bite of the apple.
Sorry, my hand was inadvertently up.
No worries. Any further discussion from the council? We'll go out to the public on the motion to amend. Anyone in the room? Sir, please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the council, Kyle Grant, Northern Gulf of Maine fisherman, Gloucester, Massachusetts. About 48 hours ago, I launched a petition online that was sent directly to Northern Gulf of Maine permit holders. Since that time, as of this morning, 48 hours on the clock, we have over 570 signatures for the petition of what I will read into the record now. And as it might be noted, that's more than there are permit holders in the Northern Gulf of Maine. What those fishermen chose to do with the document was pass it around to their crewmen, members of their community, spouses. So as I read this, I hope you all take that into consideration, the amount of participation, I guess you could say, that we've achieved in a very short amount of time. So I support an F of equals 2-1 for all areas alternative. This alternative is representative of an F equals 0.25 on Stillwagon and an F equals 0.18 for all other NGOM surveyed areas and results in a 2026 NGOM set aside of 437,867 pounds. This is a common sense alternative, which aligns with the traditional approach utilized for the past four NGOM seasons. This also aligns with an F rate seen in the draft alternative that would have seen an NGOM split area. Overall, this approach is conservative as it is below the 2026 default allocation and will allow orderly access to the resource on Stillwagon. The scallop PDT has noted repeatedly Stillwagon shows an older cohort of scallops that face natural mortality due to age. As further evidence of the health of the resource, in April 2025, Base Auction reported the sale of 378,000 NGOM pounds total. We've noted that over 95 plus percent of this fishery occurs on Stillwagon. Of these pounds, 348,000 pounds were used, leaving just 7.9% or 30,000 pounds as 1020s and a 0.1% of 2030 landed or just 436 pounds. The resource on Stellwagen is large, healthy, and can support another strong NGOM fishing season. I urge you all to stand behind the livelihoods of NGOM fishermen and support a framework utilizing F equals 0.21 for all areas. Thank you for your consideration today.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Any other public comment on the motion to amend in the room? Yes, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Todd Bragdon, Fishing Vessel Resilient. I fish on the Stellwagen, and there's a lot of scallops up there. They're getting old, and, you know, we shouldn't let them just die of old age. You know, it's a public resource. We shouldn't just let the public resource just waste away and just be clappers. We should, you know, utilize it. And so I would encourage you to support this motion.
Thank you, Mr. Bragdon. Any other members of the public in the room? Are there any public online that would like to comment to the motion to amend? Please raise your hand. Paul Wexler.
I'm kind of torn on this one, but I will put some facts out. Maybe helps things. I had three boats I were fishing up in what I like to call the Gulf of Massachusetts, but well, that's another matter. And, you know, we were, as Ms. Braun said, about a bunch of other guys, we were high grading those scallops. There are more 1020s than there were U's, but yet everyone's coming with the U's. And I don't kind of agree that there's that many that's going to die. I think guys are going to get them because at the end of the year, guys were still... That's when they started coming with the 1020s. And it's like when we go in a closed area, everyone comes in with U's. And then once the U's are gone, they start coming in with 1020s. And that's what we saw from the Gulf of Maine last year. And, you know, if you want to solve the problem, get rid of the high grading. Just then you'll have, you're not killing anything. You're bringing home what you catch. Because we were throwing away, you know, three bushels for every bushel we caught, we were throwing back over the side, according to my captains. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wickexer. Ben Martens.
Can't unmute him. Can someone else? I lost Zoom again. Can someone?
Hold on, Ben, for a moment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, please.
Awesome. Thank you all. I'm opposed to the motion, and I for certain reasons. I do think that this number starts to make sense when you listen to some of the public comments about being able to split the area and start thinking about how we can do targeted extraction into the appropriate areas at the appropriate times. Right now, we are not able to do that. And I do think there's a lot of risk. This kind of comes back to our original, like the first presentation of the day, the risk assessment, and how do we start making decisions, knowing what we know about the biomass, about the actions of the individuals within the fishery, and what we want to be doing for the short and the long-term health. Ultimately, like the difference between these two numbers is probably 2 days of fishing, maybe a day and a half. So I do think that this is not a ton of opportunity that you are creating, but there is significant risk. I wish we could do a better job of really quantifying what that risk versus reward was for the entirety of the fishing fleet. But I think we've already heard from several public comments about the high grading that was happening, that there is opportunity there. And I have no doubt that we're going to make sure that none of these scallops are dying of old age. So I would prefer to default at this point to the original motion and vote down the amendment to ensure that we can put a little bit more structure around this fishery over the next year. Hopefully in the prioritization conversation, we'll be able to do some of that as well. But I do think that right now we've kind of half-baked what we need to be doing for the management of this fishery. And it's not the time to be taking significant risks. at a time when we do need to be building something better for the future. Let's embrace the changes that we need to do this year, and then we'll figure out how to appropriately manage it better the next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martens. Last online, I have Peter Hughes.
Hey there, everybody. Good morning again. So I support the amendment. I don't see a sliding graph of any sort that shows us the multiple year classes that may be available, other than that the scallops are 9 years old and they're going to age out and they're going to die of natural mortality. I would also like to comment and say that I'm appreciative of Togue and Paul and Ben bringing forward the realities of high grading. And in my opinion, and it should be in this overall council's opinion, we need to do something about high grading. If we're just killing scallops looking for a better price, something has to change. We're our own worst enemies on the water. And that's what we need to address. And that's where we need to have some focused conversations and I appreciate the gentleman that brought the petition forward and over 500 fishermen signed on. We and crews also, we need to do the same thing with high grading and get everybody involved and show the detriment of it. I mean, I still go back to the billion pounds of scallops that we lost in Nantucket Lightship West. So I appreciate people starting to bring this to light. And I hope in the future we have some real hard conversations about this. So I do support the amendment, though. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Back to the council. Any more comments on the motion to amend? Mr. Platts.
Yeah, I wanted to wait until after I heard comments from the audience and the industry. I intend to support this action. I felt like I would before, and listening to industry comments hasn't changed that feeling. You know, I'm a pretty conservation-minded fisherman. I've certainly earned that reputation in monkfish and scallops. Our skate, but you know, conservation does come at a price to industry, and so it's tempting to be very, very cautious and think there's no cost associated with that, but there is a very real cost associated with that. So caution and conservative management needs to be tempered by the fact that there is a very real cost on the other side of that. And you know, as I do with all scallop meetings, I listen very intently to what the industry has to say. And there are certainly a lot of different voices within the industry. My read on it is that we're under harvesting Stellwagen or NGOM, and we really need to, and we tried to get to a two area system. You know, the government shutdown blocked us from that. Comfortable with harvesting at the higher rate this year, knowing that we're going to get to a two area system next year. And I agree with Peter Hughes. You know, I've seen it in monkfish. Monkfish is, and skate are struggling because we haven't done the technical business of managing fisheries. You know, we never got permit stacking. We never got leasing. We never did anything to fix the fishery. Setting specs and arguing over and debating, or also debating over how much we harvest each year. That's just kind of the foundation, but fisheries management is all the other issues, high grading and all the rest. And we have too little time and too little resource to get to those issues. And those are what provide the long-term stability and fix the core problems in fisheries. And so, you know, I hear a lot of talk about high grading and this fishery needs a fix with that. And a number of other things. But at any rate, I'll sum it up by saying I'm going to support this motion to amend. I believe we're under harvesting and I'm opposed to conservation that exceeds the costs of our imposes high costs on industry.
Thank you, Mr. Platts. I will call the question. I think we've had a pretty good discussion here, and I will do a roll call on the motion to amend. So when you are ready, Dr. O'Keefe.
Please say yes, no, or abstain when I call your name to the question on the board. Mr. Gates.
Yes.
Ms. Braun?
Absolutely not.
Ms. Odell?
Yes.
Mr. Hansen?
Yes.
Mr. Lucy?
Yes.
Ms. Obel?
No.
Ms. Ware?
No.
Ms. Griffin?
Yes.
Ms. Rolchevsky?
No.
Mr. Pappalardo?
Yes.
Mr. Pierdnock?
Yes.
Mr. Pentney?
Yes.
Mr. Platts?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Nope.
Mr. D'Angelo?
Yes.
Mr. Whelan?
No.
Mr. Alexander?
Yes.
Motion passes 11-6 with no abstentions.
Thank you. This will now become the main motion. So I think we've beat this up. Is there any further quick comment from the council as this is now the main motion? Tobron?
I'll make it quick. This is incredibly disappointing, and I am really sad to see that we are going the way of waters to the south. We should be better than this.
Thank you, Ms. Braun. I think we had a pretty good roll call there. Let's see if we can do this with a show of hands on this is now the main motion. So those are in favor of making this main motion for yes, please raise your hand. Those that oppose? The motion passes 4-3-0. Ms. Griffin.
43.
Sorry, 14.
Moving on to the fishery specifications section. On behalf of the committee, I move that the council adopt in section 4.3, alternative 2, 34 days at sea is the preferred alternative. 34 days at sea to full-time limited access permit holders and 13.6 days at sea to part-time limited access permit holders. Closures of Area 2, closed Area 2 South and Extension, and Nantucket Lightship South and North. 60-day carryover period for fishing year 2025 access area trips to Area 1 would begin on April 1st. Area 1 would not have a delayed opening from April 1, 2026 to May 15, 2026. Rationale is with no access area trip allocations, 34 days at sea will allow the fleet to spread out their effort across an expanded open bottom. Elephant Trunk in Area 1 will be open, while still representing a reasonable open bottom fishing mortality rate within the range of what the council has considered in previous years.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. This is a committee motion, does not need a second. I will go to Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also have a motion to amend. And my motion to amend is that the council select as their preferred alternative in Framework 40, Section 4.3, Alternative 3, which would be 36 days at sea. This includes 36 days at sea for full-time limited access vessels, which would translate to an open area of F.36. Part-time limited access would be at 14.4 days at sea. Closures of the Nantucket Lightship north and south only in Area 2, consistent with Section 4.3, Alternatives 2 and 4. I'd also like to include the 60-day carryover period from fishing year 2025 access area trips to Area 1. They would begin on April 1st. April 1 would not have a delayed opening from April 1st to 2026 to May 15th, 2026. The rationale would be that there with no access area trip allocations, 36 days would allow the fleet to spread out their effort in an expanded open bottom, the Elephant Trunk and open area one, open in the Area 1 opening, while still representing a reasonable open bottom fishing mortality rate within the range of what the council has considered in previous years. 36 days has been analyzed. It's a reasonable compromise between the 34 days at sea endorsed by the Scallop PDT and the 38-day at sea recommendation from the Scallop AP. I'd like to point out that
Mr. Hansen, can I get a second first?
Yeah, okay.
Is there a second to Mr. Hansen's motion? Mr. Platts, sorry, if you want to continue with your rationale.
Yeah, when the Scholar Committee met to choose preferred, this was not on the table for debate. It failed for lack of second. This was a virtual meeting, which I think is a big problem. I think everyone went waiting for the next person to do it, and it just got passed over. So it was not debated. There was no pushback from the committee on this motion because it was not discussed. When the PDT met, they had a choice between 32, 34, and 36 days at sea because they had analyzed the access area trip provisions and rejected because there was not data to support an access area trip. So they chose, in their words, a moderate approach. They picked the middle. They didn't have 38 to 39. There was 32 days was rejected at the PDT because it was too economically harmful to the industry. 36 days, there was no pushback from the PDT, but they did choose the moderate approach. So just keep that in mind when in our discussions.
Anything to add, Mr. Platts?
No, I think Eric covered it.
Thank you. To the motion to amend, Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I was really compelled by the discussion and the presentation and the question that John Quinn had asked Connor in the public comment regarding the biological risk between 34 and 36 days. And I was really compelled thinking of that, as well as slide 13 that was compared 34 and 36 days and the economic benefit that would be provided to the industry without having a biological risk. So I'm going to support this motion. I was a little confused. I was able to listen into the committee meeting, and I was a little confused why Eric didn't get a second from that discussion. And I think it was there was just really kind of confusion in having a webinar. I agree with that. I think with the information that we've been provided with today, I am going to support the 36 days and would encourage others to do so in light of there not being a biological risk. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Dell. Mr. Pentney, then Tog Braun.
Thanks. I'm not actually speaking to the motion or to amend or the main motion. I do have a question. I just want to make sure we're all clear on what happens in Area 1 on April 1st between the access area carryover trips versus it becoming an open area. So, Connor, can you just make sure we're all clear on that?
Sure, happy to. So, traditionally, the carryover period for the previous year's access area trips is a 60-day window that would occur before the area would revert to open bottom. And so if there were no delayed opening in Area 1, those trips could begin their 60-day carryover period from April 1st, have that 60-day window. I think that would kind of end sometime in late May, would be 60 days, and then the area would revert to open bottom after that.
Thanks. I just wanted to make sure that we were all clear on that.
Thank you, Mr. Pentney. Tog Braun.
Thank you. This is insane. What we do here has consequences. Caution comes at a cost, Mr. Platt says. Conservation pays dividends. Scallops grow at 25% per year if you leave them on the ground. We are where we are because of poor decisions. 34 days at sea is too much, and now we want 36? I mean, going back to the previous discussion of 500 fishermen signed off on a petition that said, yes, I want more scallops. Of course they want more scallops. We are managers. It is our job to make responsible decisions. This is insane. I will not be supporting the motion.
Mr. Alexander.
I had a question to Connor. So that area would stay closed to somebody that wants to go in there then for the first couple months. Is that what you're saying? And they'd be able to access their access trips. I guess if that's a term, they'd be able to use their access trips in there in Area 1.
In Area 1, yes, there would be no days at sea fishing within Area 1 for that first 60-day period. It would just be 2025 carryover trips.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure.
Further questions on the motion to amend from the council? Megan Ware.
It's a comment. Hopefully that's okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I guess I'm just a little concerned here about where we're going. We're at the lowest biomass level since 1999. LPUE is declining rapidly. We have no access areas. That should be a major red flag to this council that what we're doing is not working. I totally understand we're trying to balance kind of the socioeconomic realities and we're in a really tight spot, but this is the repercussion, I think, of some of the decisions we've made. And I just think we have to change course here a little bit. So I'm not going to support the motion to amend. Thanks.
Mr. Smith.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be opposing the motion to amend and supporting the original committee motion. And just wanted to touch on a couple points that have come up during the course of the conversation. You know, first, with respect to what happened at the Scallop Committee meeting and the lack of a discussion on it for a lack of a second, I listened into the committee meeting as well. I don't personally believe it was because someone couldn't figure out how to raise their hand on a Zoom. I think that there was not interest in entertaining that higher level because it was actually brought up and there was another opportunity to have a motion made and seconded and it was not taken. So that's my read on what happened at the Scallop Committee. Everybody has their own opinion on what happened there. That's what mine is. The second one is the characterization of the response to Dr. Quinn's question about relative risk between the two alternatives. What I heard was that there's not a significant risk between those two alternatives, but I do think there is risk in the approach that we are taking right now. We heard the SSC report saying this, combining the F rates between the Mid-Atlantic and the Georges Bank area is leading to greater risk, higher F rates on Georges than might otherwise be appropriate. So I haven't heard anything in this discussion to suggest that there is no biological risk to having additional 2 days at sea here. I think we should stick with the committee motion and not take this more aggressive approach, given the poor condition of the scallop resource across much of its range. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any further comment, questions from the council? I will go to the public, and I believe there is a comment that needs to be read into the record. Alex Dunn.
Thank you, Alex Dunn. I'm the public affairs officer for the New England Council, and I am reading in a letter from a Mr. Timothy P. Healerston of Mattapoisett, Mass, and of the fishing vessel Discovery and Three Sons. Letter is dated November 23rd, 2025. Dear Council Chair Daniel Salerno, thank you for the opportunity to submit written comment regarding the FY26 scallop specifications. The purpose of this letter is to ensure the Council's final decision reflects both the best available science and the socioeconomic requirements mandated under the Magnuson-Stevens Act, particularly National Standards 1 and 8. The 38 DAS alternative was not only initiated and supported by industry, but it also passed the advisory panel as its preferred alternative. Together, these actions demonstrate broad alignment between industry input and the Council's advisory process. Through the modeling process, it became clear that both the industry proposed 38 DAS and the committee supported 34 DAS alternatives fall well within the bounds of biological safety. The most relevant regulatory comparison point is the National Standard 1 fishing mortality reference value of F equaling 0.36. The committee's analysis and subsequent communication confirm that the benchmark is based on total fishing mortality, not just mortality from open areas, meaning that correct value to compare against is the total model output. Based on those outputs, a 38-day fishing period corresponds to approximately F equaling 0.269, which is not only within compliance, but substantially below the regulatory threshold. The science indicates that the level of effort is fully sustainable and poses no biological risk. Unlike standard science-based management practices, where a target fishing mortality level guides effort decisions, this year the committee advanced days at sea alternatives first and only afterward reviewed the associated F rates. This procedural inversion effectively shifted the F rate from a guiding reference point to a post hoc outcome, and is in doing so reduced transparency, analytical discipline, and confidence in the decision-making process. Both alternatives are well below the model fishing mortality level where biological concern begins to increase, meaning they provide a meaningful buffer rather than operating near the biological limit. If the stock is not biologically constrained at these effort levels, then further reductions shift from a science-based necessity to a policy decision, and such decisions must be justified on socioeconomic rather than biological grounds. The model demonstrates that 38 DAS remains a precautionary and biologically responsible effort level, therefore reducing access further would require justification beyond conservation need. The council's responsibility is not only to avoid exceeding F, but to balance sustainability with the economic health and stability of the fleet and the coastal communities that depend on it. When two options provide equivalent biological safety, the Magnuson-Stevens Act requires the option that minimizes unnecessary socioeconomic harm. For FY26, the option is clear. We respectfully request that the council reject the 34-day alternative as it lacks analytical justification and does not meet the requirement of National Standard 8. Adopt the industry submitted Addendum 9 proposal of 38 DAS, which is supported by the biological model, consistent with the F rate guidance and vital to the socioeconomic stability of the fleet and dependent coastal communities. This level maintains a conservative buffer below the reference F limit while preventing avoidable and unnecessary economic damage to the scallop fleet, the processing sector, and the coastal communities intrinsically tied to them. Thank you for your consideration and for your work you do on behalf of the fishery and the communities that rely on it. Sincerely, Mr. Timothy P. Ehlerston.
Thank you, Alex, and thank you for your comment, Mr. Ehlerston. I will go to Mr. Mattigny, Senator Mattigny.
Hi, I'm Senator.
Could you come up to the mic, please? Sorry.
I was trying to avoid that so I wouldn't go into a long speech that none of you want to hear. I think the last time I was here, I offended most in the room other than scallopers and ground fishermen. Even John Bullard, my dear friend, I think we had a one-day cold war over my comments. So despite you inviting me to sit down, I'm going to be very brief and say I strongly support the motion. And I do want to say that over the years, what I've heard here, of course, reasonable people can have very strong disagreements, and I think that's healthy. But I'm going to reference the thoughtful council member who mentioned the word insanity. What I've seen over the years, really over the decades now, I'm dating myself, is some of the insanity that's come out of some of the regulations that have not conserved well and have done tremendous economic harm. I think this is more than reasonable. If I were sitting there as a vote, and I don't expect to influence anyone other than to support the people I represent, it would be a higher day, but 36 to me seems like a reasonable compromise. I also think the last motion made by Eric was reasonable. Hope it prevails. Thanks for letting me take the time.
Thank you, Senator Mattigny. Any more comment from those in the room? Dr. Quinn.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. John Quinn, Fishery Survival Fund, in support of the motion. Before I make a couple of quick points, I really want to give a big shout out to the council staff, and in particular, scallop committee staff, Connor Chandler, and I guess Jonathan too, that the pivot they took on October the 1st when the government shut down and they had very little information and they created a new projection model, and we would not be here today taking final action without the work they did to get us to this point. So I just wanted to give them a shout out, and I know the entire industry feels that way. On to a couple of quick points. I've said this many times, but I want to say it again. This is the first time we've done projections under the new research track assessment. A lot of issues with that. Not going to go into all of them, but I think I just want to read a passage from their introduction, which was, it was a non-standard review, which may have led the working group to adopt a more conservative approach and perhaps a more risk-averse approach. We have very, very conservative terms of reference here already. And when I hear, oh, the scallop industry wants to rape and pillage the grounds, it really irritates me because it's a very conservative approach as out of the research track assessment. The second point I want to make, and my exchange with Connor is what I wanted to make, is that there's really minimal biological difference between 34 days and 36 days. I heard a little different than what Mr. Smith said, but it's the same. And I think then you got to consider the impact of those two extra days will have on the industry. Two more days with the LPUE is 3,000 pounds. That's $40,000 to $50,000 more in gross stock to a boat. That may pay the mortgage. That may pay the insurance bill. You know, there's a perception that the scallop industry is a bunch of fleet-owning fat cats. That's not the case at all. Most of them are one and two boat owners, second, third, and fourth generation families. And I think people should consider that along the way. The third topic, or actually I'll skip the third, but more the fishing practices issue. Last year, we were back and forth between 20 and 24 days. We went with the 24 because it fit better into the fishing practices. 36 days would be three 12-day trips. Traditional cycle of fishing, and make no mistake about it, is three is less than four. We've taken a reduction of one trip. And the final point I want to make is the application of the National Standard 8 to this. There's a two-prong test. Are the possible regulations consistent with Magnuson? They both are. Then you need to go to the extent that it impacts the economic vitality of the industries. New Bedford, Cape May, whole host of places are hurting. 700 million pounds of gross stock 6 or 7 years ago, we're arguing over 250 to 260. 60 million pounds, this is going to be either 16 or 17 million pounds. People are tremendous hardship, interest-only payments, deferring key capital improvements. That's what's going on the waterfront in New Bedford and up and down the East Coast. So I really urge you to go with the 36 days and support this motion because there was no difference in the biological impact between 34 and 36. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Quinn. Mr. Buckley?
Thank you. I just want to respond to one point that Mr. Quinn made regarding the use of the projection model, and that the estimates of exploitable biomass that we use to generate the projected landings estimates were based on the outputs from the SAMHSA projection model. So the updated natural mortality and growth parameters from the 2025 research track were incorporated. The spatial management that was applied is where we did not use the SAMHSA model to generate. So just want to make that point that we are using the Science Center's model there.
Thank you for that clarification. Mr. Minkiewicz.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz with the Sustainable Scalloping Fund. We support this motion to amend. Wanted to address some of the comments I've been hearing around the table about, you know, decisions we've made or why we are where we are right now. That's not factually accurate to say that. The reason being, while this body makes important decisions, makes important recommendations, there are many things that influence scallop biomass and the healthy fishery that go well beyond anything you can control. There has been no overfishing in this fishery in the last two decades plus. The fishery is not overfished. We've always harvested at a responsible rate, and that's been supported by the science. The reason we are dropping from 60 million pounds of landings to maybe 16 million pounds of landings has to do with lack of recruitment. And that is something none of us in this room control. That has happened. We have lost. We used to harvest half of the biomass from the Mid-Atlantic region or more. That region, for reasons beyond our control, perhaps warm water, no one actually knows the answer. We're working on it. That region is shut off. There's barely any landings from that region. That's why we are where we are right now. So for people to say, like, oh, gosh, we've made these horrible decisions and that's why we're here, like, that's not true. That's not why we're in this state. Now, do we have to be responsible and recognize where we are in the fishery and fish at a responsible manner to the reality that we have? Yes, absolutely. And that's what this is. You're being responsible in not allocating any access area trips because it's not the right thing to do. You'd be forcing an issue, and you'd be creating a situation where you would have the fleet pounding on an area potentially where there isn't the scallops to support that level of fishing. So not allocating an access area trip this year, as painful as it is the right decision. And then 36 days is a very modest amount of days given the biomass out there and the projected F-rates associated with it. And if anything, in the projection we're looking at, they're assuming with 1,300 pounds of landings a day is probably an overestimate. And so it's probably overestimating the overall F-rate that's actually going to occur from this allocation. I mean, this council has to deal with a lot of difficult decisions every time it meets. Fortunately, this isn't one of them. The decision between 36 and 34 days is not a difficult decision. You have known economic benefits from going to 36 days versus 34 days, and you have no known biological consequences from allocating the extra 2 days. That's about as easy as it gets. Please support this motion and recognize why we are here, and it's for reasons beyond your control, but you're still reacting responsibly to the position that we are in. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Mankiewicz. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to speak to the motion on the board? Yes, Mr. Bragdon.
Yeah, Todd Bragdon, Fishing Vessel Resilient. I would support you to, I would encourage you to support this amendment. The difference is like less than 1 million pounds to a guy like me that's got one boat. What's going to come into my pocket at the end gets me through for one more month. Takes the pressure off a little bit, makes my life a little easier. But whatever you decide, you're not going to put me out of business. You've been trying to put me out of business since the 1990s, and I'm still here. You guys come and go, and I'm still here. So I support you. I encourage you to support this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Bragdon. Is there anyone else in the room here from the public? I will go online to Mr. Smolowitz online.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, I'm putting on my researcher hat. I fully agree with everything Drew said. He said it quite correctly. It's not council decisions regarding what days at sea or areas that have had the impact on the resource. The natural processes have changed out there. We have tremendous levels of predation by starfish and moon snails. 20 years ago, I never saw moon snails out there. They're a voracious predator. Now we catch them by the bushels. So the council, if they want a scallop resource, needs to deal with the predation issue. Incidental fishing mortality has significant impact. High grading is one part of that. By having all open area access days, and I fully agree with the amended 36, certainly could go with 38. By having the days fished, the fishing on the clock, it basically minimizes high grading, basically lowering the incidental fishing mortality rates. So there's a lot of positive things occurring in this amended motion. But what the council needs to focus on is putting time constraints on access areas and places like Stellwagen Bank to prevent and avoid high grading. And there's other aspects to incidental fishing mortality that are having significant impacts. But choosing between 34 and 36 days should be a no-brainer. It should be based on, I'd rather see a fisherman catch a scallop than it being consumed by a predator, such as a starfish or a moon snail. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smolowitz. Any other hands online? Seeing none. Back to the council. I'll come to Mr. Pappalardo, and then Mr. Hansen will have the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I've been part of 2 decades worth of scallop decisions as a council member.
I've had my frustrations with things we know are happening on the water that aren't being dealt with. We've heard some of them surface today. They've been coming up more frequently. It's terrible that we've lost production in the Mid-Atlantic. I don't think any decisions I've been part of or that this council's made resulted directly in where we find ourselves today. I do agree with a lot of the comments that we heard today from the public about climate impacts, predation, but I also think personal responsibility and best practices plays a really important role for this fishery. We're not set up today to deal with those issues, but they keep coming up. And I really hope later on when we talk about the visioning document and the opportunity the council has to holistically tackle a lot of the problems that everyone talks about away from the table, off the mic. Thankfully, it's coming up on the mic more and more, that we take advantage of the opportunity to do that. I'm going to be able to sleep pretty well tonight supporting 36 days at sea. And so that's where I'm going to come down on the motion to amend.
Thank you, Mr. Popolaro. And I apologize. I'm going to open up public comment again for Mr. Riley.
Did you put your hand up?
No. Okay. Sorry. We thought you put your hand up. Never mind. Sorry. Mr. Hansen with your last word.
Okay. I have a couple last words. Thank you. Couple of things I want to address. The SSE, when they were talking about the differing F rates for the Georges Bank and the Mid-Atlantic, 30.36 was what was chosen for overall, which was the lowest rate. That was what the lowest rate was for. 0.36 was for Georges Bank. The Mid-Atlantic was 0.49 or even higher. They went with 0.36. They didn't do an average. So it is at the most conservative rate. And fishing, the scallop industry is regulated with a lot of tools in the toolbox. We have days at sea is one thing. We also have ring size and crew limits. So we're not going to catch the last scallop. Ring size does a lot for protecting the small scallops. So keep that in mind. And one more thing that I want to say. I had a conversation with a broker last night. And it was really a little unnerving to me because just the thought of regulations going to 34 made some deals that were on the table get dropped for purchases of boats. So the value of the whole fleet will go down by our actions. So I encourage you to not put the whole fleet at risk, because if the value goes down, the debt to value ratio goes up, banks will foreclose a little sooner if the value is not there to back up their mortgages. So our vote has consequences, and keep that in mind. So thank you.
Thank you. Last up, Mr. Pearnock, sorry.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question, and it is back to slide 13. And because we've heard a lot of discussion around the table and publicly here about 34 days, 36 days, but there was also some public comment about 38 days. On slide 13, it notes that the risk for overfishing is low for 34 days as well as 36 days. I'm just curious, was the same concluded for 38 days?
Mr. Buckley?
Yes, and that the total fish and mortality rate under the 38 days at sea would be well within the range specified by the ABC, so well below F of 0.36. Whether that would lead to a regional exceedance of the Georges Bank specific reference point, if the majority of that effort were coming from Georges Bank, which has been the case in the last couple of years, we don't have that information.
Thank you.
Okay, I will think we've beaten this up pretty well. I'm going to go for a roll call on this one. Seems to be some definite difference of view. So when Dr. O'Keefe, when you are ready, please do a roll call.
When I call your name, please say yes, no, or abstain. Mr. Alexander?
Yes.
Mr. Whelan?
Yes.
Mr. D'Angelo?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
No.
Mr. Platts?
Yes.
Mr. Pentney?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Pierdnock?
Yes.
Mr. Papalardo?
Yes.
Mr. Olszewski?
Yes.
Ms. Griffin?
Yes.
Ms. Ware?
No.
Ms. Obell?
No.
Mr. Lucy?
Yes.
Mr. Hansen?
Yes.
Ms. Odell?
Yes.
Ms. Braun?
No.
And Mr. Gates?
Yes.
Motion passes 13-4 with no abstentions.
Thank you for that. Now this becomes the main motion. I think we've beaten this up. Is there anything else you really need to add, Mr. Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I read my motion amendment, I read the bullet regarding the closure of the delayed opening of close area one. It was not included in the amended motion, but it was read when I read it in. So I just want to make sure that that's included in this amended motion.
I see thumbs up and nods all around. So I think we're all set.
Okay. Just so we have to include that in the bullet, that bullet in this motion.
Okay.
It's the last bullet from the original motion.
So we'll just get that plugged in here. And as this is the main motion, like I said, I think we beat this up pretty well. Once we get that all set up, I will go with a show of hands again.
I think it's Eric.
All right. For those in favor of the motion, the main motion as amended on the board, please raise your hand for a yes. Those that oppose? The motion as amended as the main will pass 15-0. Ms. Griffin.
All right, I believe that leaves me with one final motion. Connor, we're all set with the others? Okay. So I will move to submit Framework 40 to the Scallop FMP to NIMS as modified and recommended by the council today.
You got a second on the motion? Mr. Papalardo. Refresh now.
We need to submit it for it to take effect.
Thank you. I think we will do a show of hands on this one. For those in favor of, actually, is there any comment or object, any comment on the main motion, on the motion to submit to GARFO? Sorry, long morning. Seeing none, to the public, Mr. Mankiewicz.
Thank you. Sorry for delaying the inevitable Drew Mankiewicz's SSF. Just wanted to come up and say thank you to everyone that worked on this. This is a challenging year, both human cause through the government shutdown and the hand that Mother Nature has dealt us with the scallop fishery right now. I want to say thank you to Connor, Chandler, the Emilys, Travis, and I guess Jonathan too. Poor guy. In all seriousness, thank you very much. And we appreciate all the hard work that's gone into this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mankiewicz. Seeing no other comments, questions, concerns, is there any objection to the motion on the board? Any abstentions? This motion will pass with consensus with one abstention from the agency. Ms. Griffin.
That concludes our work on Framework 40. We do have one more topic in the long-term strategic plan, so I'll hand it back over to Connor.
All right, I think we're good now. I'll try to make this, I know we're a little bit behind time, and I'll try to make this streamlined here, but want to cover the final results from our long-term strategic plan. If we can go to the next slide. I think the clicker's not working there. All right. So as a reminder, the SCOLP long-term strategic plan has been a multi-year priority that we've been working on throughout 2025. The goal of this work priority was to define a 3 to 5 year vision for the SCOLP fishery and identify some of the actions that would be needed to achieve that vision. We've been, you know, asking the questions about where are we going and how are we going to get there? And I think our final product starts to outline that. And I think there is some follow-up work to really plug this into the council's priority setting process and any additional changes with the council's larger holistic strategic plan. So the for today, we'll be looking for a final decision to approve the long-term strategic plan. And align that plan with the start of any new projects for 2026. So for today in the meeting materials, there are three documents. We have the document 4A, which is the overall long-term strategic plan. We were calling it the roadmap briefly, but I think it's simpler this way. This outlines the 9 objectives and 29 strategies that we've really been iterating over the past year since we went out to for the multiple visioning sessions. So these 9 objectives and 29 strategies were overall really informed by a lot of previous SCOLP related projects that the council has worked on. So the evaluation of rotational management, the SCOLP survey working group, council discussions that and public correspondence that have really happened over the last number of years. We've kind of collated that, and that helped provide the initial framework that we then went out for public input from the 4 visioning sessions. We had those in Rockport, Maine, at the Maine Fishermen's Forum this past year, in New Bedford, Philadelphia, and by webinar. And then we've had continuous input on this on these ideas at the level of the SCOLP PDT, the AP, and the committee throughout this year. So within that, we've also provided the SWOT analysis, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, which is focusing on ways of characterizing the SCOLP resource, the SCOLP fishery, and the overall environment that support the both of them. And that was developed largely through the SCOLP plan team and brought out for the visioning sessions. Next slide. I really want to highlight the level of public input that went into this document. And I think it really reflects a lot of the industry needs and industry ideas that kind of came forth. I think through a number of these visioning sessions, we were really surprised at the level of consensus around a lot of the main pressing issues for the fishery that we heard in really at all of the visioning sessions. We had a great deal of public input. We had 60 attendees at the Maine Fisherman Forum in February, over 65 attendees in New Bedford, about 30 folks in Philadelphia, and then 50 folks attending online. And we really got, I think, a pretty broad sample of permit types, geographic locations from different ports. I really do think that the input that we received was fairly representative of the SCOLP fishery as a whole. Next slide. The other two documents that we've included, 4B and 4C, both appendices to the main document, largely the goals and objectives of the SCOLP FMP and subsequent actions. The idea there is that the strategic plan should not be supplanting the overall management objectives that are defined within the SCOLP FMP and the later amendments and frameworks that have modified it. And this really should be more of an action plan for helping achieve those management objectives. And we've kind of been thinking about this as a reference document for council consideration when reviewing the strategic plan. The second appendix is a list of evaluation criteria that the plan team has developed that would propose an annual benchmarking exercise to evaluate whether the council is actually achieving the outlined objectives of the strategic plan, update information regarding ongoing work or other considerations, and serving as a check-in before the council develops the next year's work priorities. Next slide. So all that said, we ended up with these nine overall objectives that I think are fairly comprehensive for a lot of the overarching management goals within the scallop fishery. And so the first is related to improving the management capacity, flexibility, and responsiveness in a changing environment. A lot of that has to do with how we're collecting and using information, how quickly can management respond to changing conditions in the fishery, whether that is implementing in-season modifications, opening an area, closing an area based on some predefined trigger, allowing us to respond to, I think, a lot of industry concerns that we've heard over the last number of years. And I think building the pathway to being able to use and collect information more responsibly. The second is related to improving the reliability of annual projections of scallop biomass in abundance. I think a lot of that deals with how we are plugging in the projection information and using that to come up with spatial management approaches. Some of the strategies within that have been about getting a better evaluation of projection performance and trying to fine tune that information, but also about continued development of more advanced projection approaches that would allow for more flexible spatial management decisions when defining our next year specifications. Our third is objective is around expanding opportunities in the Northern Gulf of Maine fishery while maintaining conservative management approaches. Some of these issues have come up already this year in conversation around splitting the Northern Gulf of Maine management unit into sub areas and allowing more fine spatial management, helping expand the length of the season and really grow opportunities within the Northern Gulf of Maine while maintaining the overall, I think, conservative approach specified in Amendment 21. Objective four is related to improving rotational management performance and access area fishing opportunities. And that's a fairly broad conversation. There were a lot of ideas that came out at the visioning sessions about how can the council improve upon our rotational management approach, whether it's thinking about small rotational closures kind of scattered throughout the scallop range and to help promote increased recruitment. There were conversations around expanding different access areas. Reconsideration of the northern edge came up several times. And so I think there are a number of approaches to try to help improve the success of the rotational management program. Number five is around improving fishing practices to minimize incidental scallop mortality, bycatch, and impacts on habitat and protected resources. This, I think, has come up several times today around high grading and the impact on incidental mortality. But that also has knock-on effects also related to scallop EFH and protected species interactions, allocated groundfish stocks in the fishery. And so I think there are ways that we've outlined within the strategic plan around gear modifications. Electronic monitoring is an example I'll go into here shortly. And so there are kind of a broad array of ways that we might try to think about improving fishing practices in the fleet and collecting information to try to maybe enforce those better. For number six, this is around maintaining the economic viability of the scallop fleet. Several of those have been really about reducing costs to the scallop fishery, whether that's through the cost of the observer program and developing new ways to collect that data that might be more affordable, but also around limited access permit stacking or leasing. Those are came up several times at the visioning sessions and is included in the document. Number seven is around maintaining a dynamic scholarship research set-aside program, which I think we'd all agree is really fundamental to the data that goes into this whole process. We want to ensure that the program is viable and we can continue the really essential scholarship research and resource surveys over time, but also making sure that there's an equitable distribution of compensation pounds across the fishery, as we've heard, I think, continued equity concerns in access to those compensation pounds. Number eight would be around developing the regulatory management and funding infrastructure to support scallop enhancement. And really the strategies here involve, setting up a roadmap to how we could better get a scallop enhancement program off the ground in terms of funding, thinking about what kind of regulatory obstacles there might be that the council can weigh in on. And so trying to outline what that process would look like. And then number nine, lastly, is improving scallop industry engagement and trying to have a more engaged and representative fishery at meetings of the Council Scallop PDT, AP, and committee, and trying to increase participation where possible. Next slide. Oh, sorry. And so jumping into an example here with objective five, and just to highlight what sorts of information we've included within the document. So five was around improving fishing practices and probably was a good example given the discussion today. But strategy number four within that objective is around regulating best fishing practices, including restrictions on high grading, deck loading, excessive tow times, and monitoring using deck cameras as part of an electronic monitoring program. And I think this is a good example because really an electronic monitoring program is not something the council can necessarily stand up on its own. It involves substantial research, testing, coordination with the regional office and the science center. And so if the council really wants to see this moving forward, there's a lot of coordination and other steps and I think lead time that needs to go into that. And so how do we keep track of that information, provide the council with that information when making decisions around work priorities, and when's the appropriate time that the council can step in on that and identify maybe previous steps that need to come first and start to coordinate and streamline that process. So some of the things that we've included in under this strategy would relate to possible management measures. So things could be... some of this could be about developing regulations or incentives to support an industry-led EM program. This was something that came up at the visioning sessions around maybe the council steps back, and this is more of a voluntary electronic monitoring and creating some kind of incentive system for that, or developing an EM program that would be managed and supported by the regional office. So two different approaches to achieve the same strategy there. We've identified some what kind of management action that would likely require and the type of NEPA analysis that would be required. What are some of the types of work that the PDT might need to start to get a handle on? What kind of data or research needs would be required? Who'd be leading that work and how long would we expect that work to take? Identifying any potential challenges, ongoing work. And I don't think it would be fair to say there's no ongoing work under this strategy, but certainly outside of the council process. And then other notes around how to coordinate this strategy with other similar objectives that the council has identified within the strategic plan. And so hoping to streamline and batch certain work priorities that might achieve multiple objectives, and the strategies being kind of a menu of ways the council could look at to achieve that overall objective. Next slide. For implementation, overall, really, we've been looking at this strategic plan and the overall purpose of it to organize possible work priorities earlier in the year and start to create a runway to help coordinate that work. And I think there's two pieces of that. First, about promoting efficiencies. So thinking about some of the objectives and additional research and infrastructure from outside of the council process that would need to be considered the electronic monitoring, I think, being a good example of that. And how do we track that and provide that information to help inform the council's decisions around work priorities. And so tracking those topics, even when they're not part of the current year's work priorities, so this is something that the Scallop Plan team could consolidate and provide to the APN committee annually with that kind of benchmarking exercise and trying to understand what might need to come next to achieve these overall objectives. And then again, batching related strategies into single work priorities that might support multiple strategic plan objectives. And then secondly, about guiding long-term decision-making. And so identifying what work really needs to begin in 2026 to get where we want to be by 2030. And so what's that longer runway to maybe tackle some of these more complex and challenging issues in the fishery that we might need to be spending more time thinking about given the kind of current resource-constrained environment. Next slide, please. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions or kind of discuss any next steps or thoughts on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buckley. Ms. Griffin?
Yeah, I just certainly want to thank Council Scallop staff, Connor and Chandler and Jonathan for all the work on the roadshow, but especially to everyone that showed up. You know, it was a lot of engagement, and that was really, really awesome to see. I know we get a lot of questions about how we're going to use this. I'm very excited. I mean, just I'm glad, Connor, that you highlighted that objective five, given the discussion we just had. You know, I see this document as being very useful to us in going from the hand waving and, you know, speaking into the mic to the actual actions to improve this fishery. So besides just coordinating our priorities, I really hope people will continue to engage with this document, whether we're having our holistic strategic planning conversation or, you know, in the next couple of years to help us really coordinate what actions, what priorities can leverage each other and how to best move forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. To the council, any questions for Connor? Any comments on the strategic plan as is? Seeing none. Ms. Griffin?
So I'll be happy to make a motion for us to formally accept this. All right, so I move on behalf of the committee that the council accept the SCALP long-term strategic plan as complete and satisfying the 2025 work priority. The committee was supportive of the SCALP long-term strategic plan as a guiding document to support discussion of annual work priorities.
This is a committee motion, does not need a second. Any comments, questions on the motion on the table from the council? Seeing none, I will go out to the public. Anyone in the room at the moment from the public? Seeing none, I have Mr. Smolowitz online.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I think this is a great plan. I think putting emphasis on that 5.4 is important because we have a deadline. 2027 is when we start thinking about accessing Nantucket Lightship South. With our current tools and processes, that would be a massacre. We need to figure out how to harvest that dense area of scallops. It's going to require probably some fishing time controls. Through the regular framework process, we'll never do it. I mean, we need another approach here to come up with a plan on how to access those scallops by 2027. Has there been any discussion? Now we do have, you know, EM for over a year now. Coonamessett Farm Foundation has had 6 vessels with video cameras observing the operations. We've had over 40 vessels with eMALT systems so that we could determine when a vessel is fishing or not fishing. But what is the process to be able to apply something in the 2027 fishing year?
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. So the council would need to prioritize that for work to happen in 2026 to be applied in the 2027 fishing year. Currently, that has not been identified as a proposed priority by the committee or any the process for the priority solicitation. I think it's a good question. I think at this point, it would be very challenging for the council to try to take that on alone. And so I don't know if there would be, you know, industry interest, as Connor had on his slide, for, you know, an industry-led effort or initiative to stand up a different tools or a monitoring program. I don't want to speak on behalf of the agency, but I think it would be very challenging for the agency to try to pick that up and get it operational by 2027. So I think it's a valid question and not a very satisfying answer, but I think that's where we're at in terms of council process.
Okay, thank you. I think everybody needs to think about that, because this is a very critical issue for the scallop fishery. And that's the next area that, you know, we're depending on to access, and we're not even tracking the natural mortality in there right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smolitz. Any further comment on the strategic plan from the public? Back to the council. Well, I will call the question. Seems like this was pretty happy with what we have here. So do I have any objection to the motion on the board? Any abstentions? Seeing none, this motion will pass with consensus. Ms. Griffin.
That concludes the scallop committee report.
Thank you for that. Seeing we're just a little behind, I think we'll still come back at 1:30 for the Transboundary Management Guidance Committee. So enjoy your lunch. Thank you.